Hello, 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 and welcome to this very special edition of the Trolley Heretic on tour. He's already making me laugh. I have such a special guest today. I've been on his show a long time ago now. He's been on mine, and I finally met him. And that is Mr. Charlie Veach. Charlie, hello, how are you doing?
I'm very well, Ed. It's always interesting when you've only known someone on a screen, and you've always been 6 inches tall for me on my laptop screen, and it's funny, you're a normal-sized
normal-sized
human being.
5'9", 10", something like that. And
just above average, where you're just happy to be...
I'm not stretching it at 6'5", or something. I'm looking over, he's not got enough leg space.
I'm sat cross-legged like a schoolboy in the assembly hall.
He's mounted into the window seat and gathering up his feet, he sat cross-legged like a Turk in Jane Eyre. Yes, that's it. So I'm with Charlie Veach, and he has made his way all the way down from Manchester, if you're familiar with his show, from cracky Manchester, where all the crackheads are, the people with the crutches, and all of these kinds of people, down here to salubrious Barnes, where there's not many. Have you seen any crackies?
No, I'm walking through the SW postcodes to get to the studio here and where our hotel is. It's one of those places that if there's any trouble, you know, it's you causing it. It's so safe, you know. So it's just endless prams. And one thing I have seen here is seeing mismatched mother with little blonde babies. And they were like, oh, and then I said, Laura's like, that's not our mum. I said, they're all nannies, Laura. No one raises their own kids around here. It's nannies.
Is that what we've got? I noticed that earlier. I noticed a group of about, it must have been about 12 children, tied with fluorescent bibs, I suppose you'd say, essentially tied together on a rope system led by two Muslims. I'm assuming that they were there. It wasn't some sort of piracy. I mean, they were their nursery school teachers.
Well, I was initially worried. I saw a Malaysian woman with two blonde children walking in a hurried manner. I was like, are they getting child smuggled? No, they're just nannies.
It is extremely safe, almost boringly in this area. There must have been a time from the size of the houses where working class people lived around here and cut each other.
There must have been. But, I think, it's been gentrified beyond belief. And Laura and I were on the King's Road today in a shop. And I can only describe the children as looking like little uglier versions of Princess Beatrice and Eugenie. You know, that kind of inbred, like, weird face. And we were queuing to pay, and then the mother came, oh, Jemima Tilly! And then they pushed in by accident because they knew someone that was paying. And then, I'm so sorry, madam, we were next. And she goes, do you want to go in front? And I could see what she was doing. It's that whole, her ego couldn't just say, oh my God, I'm so sorry, you're right, of course. And all I said to her, she goes, do you want to go in front? I said, well, according to the formal rules of queuing, yes. And she didn't know what to react. She just thought I was a scumbag. And anyway, it's funny, like in Manchester, I'm considered very middle class. But I come to the South, the SW postcodes in London, and I just feel like a kind of imposter from Scotland, you know, amongst all the really rich. But there you go.
When you did your pretend posh accent there, you did accidentally, I don't know if it was accidentally or deliberately, you did go into what I call posh Scottish.
Yes.
Sort of the Malcolm Modifican kind of way of barking up the words. So because you're from Morningside.
Yeah, or somewhere of that
ilk. It is very, very middle class. I was in Clacton the other day, and I think I was, me and my producer were the only middle class people we saw. I don't know if you've been to Clacton.
No, but that being the only middle, that sounds like Salford, Manchester. You know, you can go for days without seeing a middle-class person. Is Clacton a diverse, energetic
absolutely
area?
Absolutely not diverse.
Not diverse.
It's just white people.
Oh, like white working class.
Absolutely.
There's
a sense in which you kind of feel at home in a way because it's England. It's really England.
Yeah.
But then it's an England where everybody's fat. Everybody has tattoos. Well, most people are fat. Most people have tattoos. Yeah. A lot of people have one leg. And a lot of people are in mobility scooters.
The type of people that if they're maybe able to overcome some sickness or disease or ailment, they choose not to and choose to go into disability benefits.
I did meet a number of people were on disability benefit, sitting in their car, whatever you call them, their mini mobility scooters by the sea or whatever. And one woman was talking about how she has to use her own money to pay part of the rent. I was like, your own money? What do you mean by that? Yeah, my universal credit.
So the housing benefit doesn't cover it.
I wasn't familiar with this concept. So that's so she regarded universal credit as that's hers.
Yes.
Because she hasn't earned it. But that's her money. And then there's this extra thing. So I didn't know about that.
And you know, speaking just very briefly about universal credit benefits, you know, like you look at a pavement and plants and seeds will grow successfully. And any little crack in the pavement, concrete, plants. And human beings are the same. Like a benefit that was designed to get you between one job or the other. Humans have figured out a way to successfully breed big families on benefits.
Mm.
And watching your videos, Ed, like your predictions, what is it, in 100 years? I don't know if you give a particular time stamp on it, but we're getting a lot...
85 IQ in 100 years.
85 IQ in 100 years because normal middle-class people cannot afford to have children.
And just don't want to have them.
Don't want to have them because a lot of work and it's tough, whereas... When the government's subsidising you for every extra child and you get more money, more beer tokens, more cigarette tokens.
You get £700 a month. A month is this universal credit. It's more than that.
And then housing benefit.
And then the extra things, you see.
The extra cost of living money.
Oh,
£300 a month.
All this stuff. So these people were still saying to me, oh, well, we try to get Bob. I've had to give up cigarettes. Oh, well, I can afford them. I don't, no, everyone's getting this money. You're spunking it away on something.
Takeaways.
I think so. And the amount of takeaways you got in this place. I mean, most of the shops are takeaways.
Yeah.
And the people look like most of the shops.
They are like the new elite. They are, you know, the kind of, if you're fat English, or it doesn't matter what your nationality, you're in Britain on benefits, having 10 children, you are the genetic elite. You're being subsidized to, you're winning.
Yeah.
You're winning. And I don't know what the answer is. If you cut the benefits, then they'll all riot. They'll all turn into Hamas.
Will they riot, though? I think rioting involves a certain degree of organisation and intelligence. I was just talking to academic agents.
So you have to get off your arse. And,
yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. I noticed that, actually. I don't know if it's me being sort of reading too much into it. But I noticed that the job centre, we stood outside the job centre and were talking to them, and the appointments seem to stop at about 2 o'clock. And it's almost as if the attitude of the people that run the job centre is, we will get them out of bed in the morning. They are not going to sleep in. We will deal with them in the morning. We'll do admin in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Which I think is fair enough, isn't it?
Yeah.
They at least have to get out of bed. One of the things they can do when they're lying in bed, of course, they can watch the Charlie Veach YouTube channel.
Yes.
I've not done it lying in bed personally, but I've done it in various places. And it's you reached a turning point recently. You reached a string of zeros.
I have.
A lovely, beautiful, beautiful string of zeros. And you've been doing it a long time. I mean, a very long time now. But what is it that you think has kept it going and has meant that it's managed to reach that many string of zeros?
Well, I think a bit like the musician Madonna. I constantly reinventing myself, you know. So I was a left-wing anarchist activist in my 20s. In my 30s, I became a bit more of a cinematographer, filmmaker. Oh, look, I've got young children. But then now I'm in my 40s. I'm jaded, cynical, a bit more nihilistic. And now I want to, I don't know, maybe my channel is like a nostalgia for what I remember of Britain in my early childhood in the 80s. Being half Brazilian, half Scottish, living in the Middle East, Saudi, West Africa, whenever we'd fly over to Britain, I was, even as being British, the whole Paddington Bear, red letterboxes, red phone boxes, London policemen, bobbies with hats, everything being safe, people saying hello to each other, milk being delivered by, you know, electric vehicles at 5 a.m. There's like a kind of a sadness in my work that I go out there. And I'll give you an example recently of this sadness. Is I was filming, and I sometimes if there's police around, I'll shout out things even more confidently than usual. So there was a bunch of Middle Eastern men, you know, maybe Mediterranean, Syrian, Lebanese type men in their 30s, late 30s, cuddling, touching, 12 and 13 year old girls. The girls were dressed inappropriately already.
Where was this?
In Piccadilly Gardens in Manchester.
Right.
And so I, on video, shouted out, all you 35-year-old men, you're here dealing drugs, stop hanging out with 12-year-old girls and go home. And they're all like, huh? Shocked. The police were shocked that I said it as well. Someone has to say it.
Mm.
And then one of the Middle Eastern-looking gentlemen, he goes to me, I know your channel, Veach. If I catch you outside the city yet, I'm going to rob you. I'm going to rob you. So I said to him, I'm going to rob you of your dignity. And he goes, I'm going to rob you. And then I processed it for about 30 seconds. And I said, you know what? you're clearly not from here. How would you feel if someone went to your native country and said to the people there, I will rob you? This is an outrage. I got taken aside by the police and goes, oh, Charlie, I'm not comfortable with you saying, like, how would you feel in your own country? That could be a bit, you know...
Not comfortable. Have you committed a crime or not?
No. And then the video went viral and it caused a big stink with Manchester police and people. And
How did it cause a stink with the police?
Well, it went mega...
They're normally quite nice to you, I've seen.
Very nice to me. But I've noticed that whenever a cop says something stupid to me, and it goes mega viral, and all sorts of different people taking the clip on Twitter for various reasons. Some people just hate paedophiles. Other people are very patriotic. They don't like to see England now as this hellhole. And then that officer, I just don't see again. Like, they're on the city centre team. Video gets seen by millions of them saying, oh, I'm not comfortable with you asking the man who's threatening to rob you, who clearly rapes 12-year-old girls, where he's from. And so maybe he's gone in for a bit of re-education. Maybe. Who knows?
So you're having an effect on the quality and the training of Manchester.
Well, I like to think, like, I wish more people would do what I do, but I do also value the lack of competition, so people will watch my channel because nobody else can do it the same way. But I'll tell you what, though. I interviewed a gentleman who worked for Manchester Council called Nick Buckley, MBE.
Oh, I've interviewed him.
Oh, you know Nick.
Great guy, great
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, lovely. I loved him. And so 20-minute interview at the council. Very lucky with things going on in the background. Really good interview. And he said the city centre is a hellhole. Andy Burnham, the mayor, Labour mayor, is doing nothing. 2 days after that interview aired, and it went a bit viral, 25, 30,000 views for a man talking. It's quite good. And within 2 seconds, there's Operation Vulcan. I like the name, the Operation Vulcan. Last year, they had Operation Perseus, you know, chopping Medusa's head.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they love it. So I don't know what Vulcan is. He like steel and forging steel and stuff like that.
I can't remember. I don't know. I mean, it's a reference to Star Trek and Star Wars and all that.
But 2 days after the Nick Buckley interview, when he says we're going to clear up Manchester, Andy Burnham cleared up Manchester, and it was crackhead free for a week.
A whole week.
It was very safe. I would have maybe even taken my children into Manchester for a week.
Oh, well, steady on.
Yeah, I know. Maybe I'm getting a bit excited. We're in an interview setting.
How old are your kids? I mean, I think that's, I would never take my children, no matter what age they were. In fact, if they were 18, 19, I would discourage it.
No, but very little.
So that's why you think that it's the reinventing yourself. But why was there a need? I mean, it's interesting. It's what you do in some ways. It's quite a... is it the thrill of danger? I mean, you've put yourself in quite difficult situations.
Yeah, before. I think I was a bit... Asperger, maybe a bit on the spectrum growing up at school. I was popular with other people who were a bit autistic, I think. We were like, I was the king of the saddos, you know, of the like not cool
kids.
Like
the Haribo Museum person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think I wish I stay up at night wishing I had good comebacks or people bullying me at school, but then I grew up and I think in a way it's me trying to get my own back at bullies and people who just want to.
So you put went. Me you down. Went to. You went to. So you were from Edinburgh. Is it?
Yeah.
And you
yeah.
went to some private school in Edinburgh.
Edinburgh Academy.
Yeah, it's quite well known. Edinburgh Academy. And then being Scottish, of course, you have to go to your local university. It's the law.
Yeah.
So Edinburgh University, philosophy, same as David Hume.
Yes, moral philosophy. Yep.
David Hume. True. And then you. But what was all this being in Saudi Arabia? What your father was working?
My dad was a harbour pilot in the oil industry. So he was glorified valet parking for oil tankers because they arrive at a port. The captain doesn't know the currents and the sandbanks. So they have the pilot gets helicoptered or speedboated out to the tanker and then they park it. So where there's rich Arabs and oil, there was the Veatch family. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your father was, your mother was.
Mother's Brazilian, dad's Scottish.
Yeah.
And the only reason, my parents would never have paid for it out of their own pocket. The only reason I went to boarding school, Saudi Aramco, the oil company paid the school fees and the flights for all the children, for all the Western people. This is how they got all the white people to work out in Saudi Arabia.
Okay. So you spent a bit of time out there. Okay.
Yes, I did. Yeah. My first ever arrest was the Saudi religious police. I had a 16-year-old. I was 16 as well. So don't worry, not an underage girlfriend. I was young as well. But gave her a kiss on the lips in a shopping mall in Saudi Arabia. Got seen by a religious policeman. They called him Matawa. Big bearded... Wahhabists, and luckily we both had the ID that we worked for. Our parents worked for Saudi Aramco, so angry phone calls were made. We weren't whipped, but there was a funny scene when we got taken to this room and they're shouting at us. My girlfriend at the time, we're going back 25, 27 years. She starts crying. So I go to console her. And the Matawa grabs me and goes, "You do not touch woman!" And I was like, "Oh, fuck yeah." I was like, "Of course."
So far, you're compounding your original offense.
I was like, in front of them, you know, like trying to console her. It's going to be okay.
So what was your second arrest?
Oh, God. Have I ever been arrested for anything dishonest? No, they're always fighting or public order or things to do with my YouTube channel, you know, like kicking off with people. And
okay.
But no, dozens. No, I'd say 18 arrests.
18 arrests.
Yes, two convictions, public order offences. I also, stupidly, I got in Burnley filming a year ago, a crackhead attacked me. I tried to shake it. He refused to shake my hand, so I made some joke. He's, "Oh, where are you off to next?" I said, "Your mum's house." Just a bad mistake. He attacks me, starts throwing punches. The police come. Everyone in Burnley bears false witness against the evil far-right YouTuber Charlie Veach. And I get issued a £90 antisocial ticket, an actual violation ticket. And because it said on it, "By paying this does not indicate any legal, you've not admitted anything. It's an out-of-court settlement."
Mm.
And then I subsequently find out that it's on my criminal record.
So that was a lie?
It was a lie. It's on my criminal record, yes.
Well, for what offence did you get a criminal record in the first place?
It was it's on my record as paid the fine for acting in a threatening manner.
No, but you're saying you got a criminal record?
Yes.
So I thought to get a criminal record, you have to be convicted of something in court.
I have two convictions, unfortunately, for public order offences. But then when I went to check my criminal thing, it said the Burnley fine that I paid, and I did not expect that to happen.
This is not usual, is it, for a privately educated graduate of the University of Edinburgh to have criminal convictions for two public order offences?
I'd just like to say, categorically on video, I pled guilty doesn't necessarily mean that I was guilty of the offences. Sometimes it's just easier to...
Okay, all right.
Plead guilty.
So you went to Edinburgh for 4 years, I suppose. Yeah. And then after that, what did you end up doing?
I ended up, like all philosophy graduates at Edinburgh, you either become a philosophy PhD lecturer or you do everything else. And Edinburgh, my dad's like, "Oh, Edinburgh's a financial... Why don't you become a financial advisor?" So found a German company, Marschallic Lautenschlager. They're on the Frankfurt DAX as a big bank. But they opened up a UK IFA business. So they trained me up, got my FPC certificates, became a financial advisor. And then I did that for many, many, many years in Edinburgh and also in London. Moved to London 2005. Didn't start YouTubing properly until about 2010, 2011. Yeah, 2009.
Yeah, I know it was 09. Yeah, I was about to say that because I saw on your channel.
I'm just going to take my tweed off. It's very warm in the studio.
I don't know. Maybe there's something wrong with me. I don't feel that hot. Or maybe the guests are under.
Maybe
more
you're just
light.
More of a like you've got more better body control of temperature, like my regulation.
My body regulates the temperature correctly. Yeah.
Just, okay. I hope I'm not affecting all the white balance and all the settings
on
the camera.
I think it's absolutely fine to just wear a shirt, no cravat, but never mind.
I know.
So I think the woman in the shop at Kensington would have liked that. Perhaps. Was it Kensington? Where was it?
Yeah, it was King's Road.
Chelsea. So, right. So you were doing this job. It was presumably quite well paid, but you didn't like it, I guess. You didn't find it satisfying. Yeah. So what was it that moved you over into the world of being a online agent provocateur of
You're
trappies?
Right. The remuneration wasn't too bad in the IFA world. And I got made redundant and got a 3 month salary. And so I was like, "Oh, wow, I could either not get another job in finance or I could take this opportunity at the age of 28 to finally try and do what I wanted to do since I was a little boy, which is work in movies, media, filming, video, directing." And I did it, I think, the right way. YouTube was invented a few years earlier, 2005, and I thought, "I'll do it myself." And so I started megaphoning in London, very kind of lefty anarchist vibe. I even did a video for Lush saying no one is illegal. I was campaigning for no borders. And looking back, I'm like, what have I done? But I was in my 20s, you know, I was young. And I think the political landscape back then wasn't as polarized, as binary as it is now. Like, remember when we were in our 20s, Ed, like, politics would come up, but it's more like if someone's fun to hang out with rather than are they left wing, are they right wing?
Yeah, I had all, when I was at university, which was, I mean, I think you're, what, you were a year older than me.
Yeah.
When I was at university, basically everybody was left wing. I was right wing and a member of the Conservative Party. And that was regardless just a sort of harmless eccentricity.
An eccentricity, yeah. An interest, a hobby. Yeah. Whereas now it's like we're in the pre-Civil War, everyone's taking sides. You know, just to jump into different topics, Hamas, our favorite balaclava wearing funny people in the Middle East.
Mm.
I say this with horror of what they've done, but they've called for an Islamic Day of Rage for the after tomorrow, Friday the 13th. It's a great, Freddy Krueger, Jason. So they're calling for an Islamic Day of Rage, and I've just done a video here.
And they'll get it though. I mean, they'll get it.
Of course they will. There's enough young angry people that any excuse to kick off. Any excuse.
So the streets of Leicester, of Burnley.
Luton, they've already burnt down the car park at the airport in Luton. Did you see that?
Oh, you're saying that's awesome.
Well, there's no evidence, but it's very funny timing with Israel-Palestine kicking off that the city in England with the most Muslims would have a massive fire at the airport. I'm just, connecting dots. There's no evidence for it, though. So, but
no, there's no actual evidence for it. It is scientific fact, but there's no actual
evidence. No, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Okay, so you started doing your megaphoning anyway in London.
Yeah.
And how were you led to what I frankly regard as not the best place to live, which is Manchester? How did you end up there?
Yeah, well, so I was working with a gentleman called Danny Shine. He's an Orthodox Jewish wedding singer. And he looks like a mixture between Dan Aykroyd and Richard Nixon. Obviously, Richard Nixon when he was in the White House, pre-Watergate. So we did that, and that was very entertaining. We both held conspiracy theorist views. That was very, very good. And how did I end up in Manchester? I met someone and had a child in very quick succession. And so the children make me a Mancunian now.
I
would stay in Manchester for them forever, of course, but they're not going to be children all their lives. And I would strongly advise my three children that when they come of age to leave Manchester for more, or maybe, shall I say, less insane cities.
But in terms of your channel, though, the fact that it's, as you put it, insane is part of the things, part of what makes it. I mean, you can just go out in the morning and interesting in a way that we can't be that sure of around here.
No.
The interesting content is going to just organically manifest.
I mean, you're absolutely right. Pound for pound, square inch for square inch, there is no city on, not even London. I did a video with Laura. We came to London and over 2 days tried to put together a video. It didn't compare at all to an average Tuesday morning in Manchester walking around. What I love about Manchester, it's extremely social class diverse. From the scummiest, like living in the gutter crackhead, through to some very posh people. And when I look at my demographics online, male, female, and all ages, 13 to 18 through to 75 years plus, every bar is identical. And so all social classes watch me, all ages watch me. Unfortunately, it is a sausage party, 95% men. I'm not popular with the ladies. I'm glad Laura in the other room, I'm glad if they can hear us. Hi, Laura. Hi. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it is. It's. Oh God, that's even more masculine than my channel.
Really? You get more.
I'm about 70% male.
Really? Because yours is academic of the ideas, where mine has that, but it's very kinetic, war fighting, street
it's fighting. Yeah,
street
it's, fighting. It's fighting.
And speaking of the fighting, when I moved to Manchester, I was a soft, conflict avoiding, middle class boy from a good family. Now I'll throw the first punch all the time. Obviously, if it's legal to do so as a self-defense preemptive strike. But I would run away from people half my size 12 years ago. I would run away a little bit. Mm. Anyone confronts me, I'm like, whoa.
A year ago or so, you had that they-them that attacked you.
Oh, God, there's been quite a few big chubby they-thems. Nondescript big chubbers.
It was near Manchester University or something, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, I know which video. I was at the socialist workers' stall.
That's the one, socialist workers.
They were insulting me. He goes, oh, you're pathetic, you've got no subscribers. I said, no, not only do I have hundreds of thousands, I bet you they get more sex than you. And his little brain, his hard disk noise, and he goes, you're misogynist. I said, what? For saying my fans get more sex than... What? Misogynist? What? Anyway, so then as I was leaning over filming, I had my legs apart. I'm 6'5". I have to often stand with my legs apart so I'm not towering over all the munchkin like betas around me. So as I was leaning over forward, I felt the tip of a shoe clip my testicles from behind at high speed. And luckily, it was painful afterwards. I turned around and a young girl, 18, pretending to be a man called Bob or Richard or whatever. Now, before that, before she kicked it, before the creature kicked me, I had a conversation saying, are you a boy or a girl? And he goes, boy, very clearly a feminine girl. So then this woman felt, sorry, this, now it's hard to know in 2023, this creature saw a 6'5", hairy, big man, big strong man who could snap them in half. She felt it was safe to kick me in the testicles, to put my ability to father children at risk. And so I turned around, and had it actually been a boy, I would have smacked them very hard. And I probably would have, I don't want to sound like a crazy person, but I find sometimes, especially when you're a very big man, a very open hand slap can be more humiliating than a punch. And I've employed it many times. And also, you're not likely to break your finger. You're also not likely to cause permanent damage to the person you're hitting. So all round, I would say slapping is a much more kosher alternative than punching. So anyway, coming back to the they-them. So I turned around, realized it was a young lady that just kicked me badly in the balls. So I grabbed her backpack and I ripped it in half. And all of the contents of her backpack spilt out onto the street. And I felt that was fair.
Yes.
But then all the lefty men came running in. Oi, 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 oi. You can't hit a woman. And I was like, it just said it was a man. And then the crew is like, so that was.
And even if it was a woman, all the sex is equal. And isn't, I mean, that's the thing. That's the fascinating thing about them. They're totally logically inconsistent. When it suits them, sex is a fluid thing. It doesn't exist. When it doesn't suit them, apparently they're chivalrous. They're troubadours.
Yes.
Rescuing the poor maiden in distress. I mean, how extraordinary.
They are. And I saw a banner in Manchester. It goes, is biology the root of women's oppression? And it got me thinking that to even ask a question like that, these people are at war against the universe, against the very fabric of reality itself. And they see people who aren't spiteful mutants, to use your excellent phrase that I use all the time on my channel. Thank you very much.
I saw you saying it on Paul Joseph Watson's channel. He clipped a video.
Oh, did he? Yeah.
Saying that, you said something. Are you a spiteful mutant?
You know what? After I get back, I'm going to let everyone know where it comes from. So so I saw this sign, is biology the root of women's oppression? And isn't the Bolshevism we see around the world now is the people with bad genetics realizing that they vastly outnumber people with good genetics and bandying together to create a world where they are the elite?
Yes.
Of course, and it's the spite of the mutant. And isn't it the exact same reason why Cain killed Abel? Isn't it, in a way?
So expand on that.
Well, you know, the gods favored Abel. He was a handsome guy. All his crops worked. When he took the sheep out, the wolves didn't eat his wolves. And Cain tried it. His crops didn't do very well. He wasn't very intelligent. He was a bit uglier. And it's a very short passage in the Old Testament. But he caved his head in with a rock just because he was handsome and popular and nice. And because the things he did worked out.
And to expand on your idea, of course, he then was the mark of Cain.
Yes.
And they have their mark. They have blue hair, green hair.
Poison dark frog hair.
Dark frog hair, aposematism, you know, the poison. Yeah, exactly.
What is the aposematism?
Aposematism is that you display very clearly your poisonousness, your danger. Oh. The opposite of camouflage. Camouflage, you don't want to be seen. Aposematism, you want to stick out so that everybody leaves you alone. And that's what they do. And it's the difference between a wasp, who is genuinely dangerous. I mean, he really will attack you, or she, attack you and sting you, and a hoverfly. Yeah. Wants you to believe they're dangerous and stay away, but they're not dangerous. And that's what they are. They're hoverflies. It's an infestation of hoverflies.
It's funny you mention hoverflies. Can I just say something very quickly about the animal kingdom?
Mm.
I was showing off in Manchester to all the city slickers. I can't remember what the context was, but there's a big hoverfly, and everyone's like, that's a wasp, Charlie. That's a wasp. I said, it's a hoverfly. Watch this. So I grabbed it by the wing, And its mimicry was so potent, Ed, it even turned its abdomen around to pretend to try and sting me. And I had to really... That's a fucking hoverfly. And it was, but it...
Like a mutant hoverfly.
Yeah, and it even twisted its abdomen around the way a wasp would to sting you. And I thought, that's incredible. Anyway, just wanted to say that as an aside.
I think I saw that you filmed that, didn't you?
On a different one, yes, I did. I was that. In Sheffield, yes. I filmed another hoverfly that I caught. And but yeah, I'm quite often catching hoverflies to show to people they're not wasps. It's the same way I'll smack about a few lefties to show that they're not poisonous. You know?
They're not. I was at Bird World in Farnham.
Yeah.
And there was this massive, nobody would go near it, this massive, I guess it was a hornet, but it was huge.
Like one of those Japanese murder
maybe
hornets.
Maybe it was one of them.
Yeah.
It might, because they've now been seen in Surrey and Hampshire,
yes,
and
yeah,
the
they're
south of England. So it was huge. And nobody was going near it. And I just thought, well, someone needs to step up and squish it.
Yeah.
So I did. So yeah. I just got up, walked up to it and stomped on it.
Yeah.
And then it was still breathing.
Was it still going?
After that, I had to stomp on it again. So that's how impervious to violence these things are. That's how hardy they are.
Reminds me of a story my dad said when he was working on ships in Angola and in the kind of beetle season. He says there are beetles so big that you went to stamp on them, they just shrug their shoulders and throw you off. The beetle just hisses at you.
But I think, it's nothing. Just is that the best you can do? I mean, that's a frightening thought for a large insect that if you're allergic and it stings you once, you're dead.
So just to explore the world Bolshevism, like doesn't seem to be any direct... I mean, we can argue that the woke people and corporations are pushing out the messages, but it seems to be almost like a hive mind of the spiteful mutants. They're all... They sense weakness and they sense blood and they sense almost, you know, there's white guilt to do with diversity and racism. I think there's also middle class and upper class guilt that, you know, Europeans tend to feel very guilty about their success and stuff. And so the Bolsheviks, they take advantage of that. And they're like the whole, like, please, what's it to you? Like, everything's easy for you. You've got sex and children and money and houses. Like, we want to rewrite the language.
Precisely. They're extreme... Individual. We're evolved to be basically group-oriented across time. Just take away the evolutionary pressures, then all these things come together because things that you evolve for, you select for, become pleiotropically related. They come together. And one of those is basically being genetically healthy, because we're selecting for that, and having a pro-social personality. And that means being group-oriented. Take away the evolutionary pressure, you're going to get more and more people that are sick, physically sick, and who can... They're going to be ugly, they're going to be short, they're going to be whatever, and they're going to come weak, and they're going to combine that with being very selfish people, individualists, and they're going to combine that with poor mental health. Yeah. And then in that context, what are they going to do? How do you... You want power, because you're an individualist, you want power. How do you get power? You can't have a fair fight.
No.
Then you'll be beaten to death. So you have to virtue signal, and you take advantage, as you say, of... A very good point. Of these things that which pro-social people have. In abundance.
Empathy.
Guilt. Empathy.
Yeah.
So you can be easily manipulated. And that's why I think things always seem to shift to the left. Because conservatives, they value group orientation and they value individually oriented values. They care about harm avoidance and equality as well. Mm. If you only care about harm avoidance and equality for your own good, and you signal that, oh, I'm so in favour of the good of the group and whatever, then the conservative can sympathise with you.
Yeah.
So it's asymmetrical. So you always push things along until you get to chaos, until you get to a war. As you said with Manchester earlier, it gets to such chaos that even someone like Andy Burnham has to say, OK, well, we need to stop this. There's so much... appalling stuff happening.
Yeah.
But even then, that's just him as a Machiavellian realising, oh dear,
going to lose the election.
This Buckley guy, he's not going to win, but he could take away, which is unfortunate, by the way. He could take away enough votes from me that the Conservative or the Liberal wins. I'd better steal his idea and act on it. And that's a tremendous shame, by the way. If you're watching this and you're from Manchester, I don't know, maybe my endorsement's the kiss of death. I shouldn't do that. But you know, he's a lovely fellow, undoubtedly. And
I'll tell you the good news. I think we're so far along the culture war now that we're in the kind of like actual open warfare. So I think any endorsement is helpful. And any labels or criticisms that people can throw at us, or, you know, like, oh my God, Ed, why are you chatting to Charlie Veach? He's a crazy, bloody, violent guy from Manchester. We're just... the labels don't mean anything anymore. Like, I get called paedophile or racist or sexist or transphobe, on a almost daily basis. And my viewers, by the tens of thousands, sometimes by the hundreds of thousands, see me get called all these things, and you just carry on about your day.
We know that these are these shut-up words, these bludgeon words, these indefinite words of attack. We've always had them.
Yeah.
I got me thinking, actually, when I was in Essex, as I said, yesterday, and Essex was the heart of the witch craze. And that's another example. And it was, why was it the heart of the witch craze? Because they were so Protestant there, they were so religious there. Terms like papist in the 16th century, what did it really mean? It meant bugger all. It meant you have deviated even slightly from orthodoxy. And that is dangerous for those of us that have power, because our power is based around us signalling that we are the most orthodox possible. If you undermine the orthodoxy, you're undermining potentially the source of our power.
Yeah.
Therefore, you must be reproved. You must be manipulated to move back onto to not in any way deviate from the path of orthodoxy. We will do that with the term papist. And so it's indefinite. It's like racism. Anything can be racist at all. Yeah. Or not racist, depending on the mood of those in power.
Yeah.
It's a way of frightening weak people to kind of get in line and not question the system, because they're questioning the system a bit, and questioning the system a bit questions the power of those that are in charge of the system.
Yeah, it's like 1,000 years ago, if you get called a heretic, the village thinks you're a heretic. You're not going to do well. Like, the labels are there for a reason, to ostracize.
Yeah, heretic's another one. At what point are you a heretic as opposed to someone that's legitimately questioning?
And speaking of religion, do you think this world Bolshevism that we're seeing in the West especially, does it have religious elements? Is there like a kind of hippie world worship, or, you know, like the whole climate change seems to, I hate to use the word, seems to intersect with the woke, it seems to intersect with diversity. They all seem to be... And it seems to be, I went to some conspiracy talk in Oslo, very interesting, where we can speak very openly on this podcast, can't we?
Like
this.
Yes.
Yeah, so because I'm slightly Mediterranean looking with a very big, I'd say a Roman nose, a bunch of Norwegians took me aside for 10 minutes and they said, "You're a Jew. You're Jewish." I said, "No, I'm not Jewish. You're a fucking Jew."
Bloody hell, what kind of conference is this? Cripes.
Yeah, so I was like, no. But anyway, so it was a very conspiracy theory. We went there to talk about 9/11 was an inside job. I don't believe that anymore. I think...
This is quite a while ago.
Yeah, 10 years ago. Ten years ago.
You were in your conspiracy phase.
Yes. Okay. In my early 30s, very conspiracy. And so I was there, and the guy, it was an American guy, gave a talk saying that there's an ancient Greek idea of the androgyne, that it's like a kind of eternal tranny, a kind of a Greek god of that's got male and female, and they're worshipping this, like, unfortunately sterile androgynous god, and it stuck with me since then, because that was before trannies were being pushed onto children. But now I always think, that is there some like secret society religion?
I personally my view is that societies go through cycles, and at certain stages in the cycle, i.e. the winter or the autumn, you start to get the breakdown of selection. What you've been selecting for is the collective worship of a moral god, and a religion that is basically promoting adaptive things, taking that which is adaptive and making it into the will of God. And as you get the rise in whatever you want to call them, mutants or whatever, then you're going to start to get a rise in different forms of religiosity that will deviate from that form which is adaptive. And some of those are going to basically get maladaptive things and make those into the will of God. And you see that in the winter of civilization with Christianity, with certain forms of Gnosticism, such as the Ophites, and that there's various others that basically worship sterility, that say that the highest thing you can do is certainly is to not have children. You should be, the world is an evil place, and therefore by having children you're perpetuating people into evil.
Yeah.
And that's interestingly, when I've talked to these kinds of leftists, they will say, actually, what I've said to me, that the part of the reason they don't want to have children is, well, the world is so terrible, the world is so awful, and therefore it's wrong to bring children into this evil world. It's a very Gnostic view. So I think it does. I think it has... Religion can be talked about as a number of things that have come together as a bundle.
Yeah.
They're then selected for. Weaken the selection, the bundle breaks up. And you're going to get, therefore, all kinds of, what you might call them, quasi-religious sort of things. I don't know if it's exactly the same as a religion, but quite
subsects.
That's what this is. And if you think about they don't have the belief in a moral God, but they do have a lot of other traits of religion, like absolute certainty, moral superiority, dogmas. Yeah.
And their iconography is very strong, almost like the Catholics, and all the flags and the symbols and the fists and the symbols are incredible. Like every day, there's a new sexuality flag that comes out that's like some weird pastel shade. And
I have a friend from Belfast, and he was walking along on the Falls Road, and then he was on what's the Protestant road called?
Shankill,
yeah. And on both of those, you see the same thing. That what has united both the Protestants and the Catholics is the rainbow flag. Now you see this pub. It's known. It's everybody knows on the Shankill. That's a UVF pub. It's rainbow flag. You go on the Swalls Road. Everyone knows that's an IRA pub. Rainbow flag.
And that's how
homosexuality has essentially ended. They're united over that. Virtue signalling in Northern Ireland. Over the rainbow flag.
You may have just given me the first example of that rainbow flag iconography being used for a good purpose, maybe?
I suppose so, in a sense.
If we can have more homosexuals bringing together, like maybe Israel, Hamas, maybe the gays could go in there and show them the benefits of male love. You know, Hamas, I think, you know, they're very strict. You can't have a girlfriend until you're married. So they might be open to a Hamas, maybe. There's a lot of tension there, you know.
If that's true, if the rainbow flag, could unite warring...
Well, we know Tel Aviv is like the world's gay capital, you know. The Jews love a bit of the ancient Mediterranean boy love, you know.
Oh, no, they were very against it.
No, but is it the secular Jewish people very gay?
I remember reading about this, that they had... The reason why there's some... Is it in the Bible? Is it somewhere in Corinthians or something like this? It had to be stressed to them that homosexuality is wrong in both giving and receiving.
Oh, yeah.
Because the tradition, that there was a belief among the Hellenized Jews, a bit after the time of Christ, there was a belief that, it's okay to be the top. That's all right. It's just if you receive, you're an abomination.
That's female, isn't it?
Yeah, it was emphasized. This was the Hellenized Jews.
Yes.
And they'd taken on that idea.
Yeah.
But the original Jewish idea in Leviticus is absolutely no, never, never, you know, it's the worst.
I see.
You should be put to death, is what it says in Leviticus.
Ah, so maybe it's Hellenic influence.
It's Hellenic.
So as the joke goes, how do the Greeks separate the men from the boys?
I don't know.
With a crowbar.
Although, ironically, now Greece is a fairly conservative place on these kinds of issues.
You know, I was thinking about Greece the other day. Do you remember, I think it was called Laika? No, was that the astronaut dog? Anyway, I think the riot dog in Athens was called Laika as well. There's like a little mongrel dog that was with all the left-wing protesters fighting the WTO, G20 type. Remember? Do you remember 10 years ago, Angela Merkel kept lending money to Greece and they never paid it back? What happened to that? How is Greece still running? Do they just refinance it all into like 100-year low-interest terms?
I suppose if you have fiat currency, you just create more currency.
Just refinance it. Undermine
inflation. Undermine the value of the currency, and then that's...
I guess you can stretch out a loan into infinity, and if you keep the interest rate low, you say, that's why
loans...
Sorcery!
It is. Loans, that's what, once you have fiat currency, it is sorcery. Loans shouldn't be in money. Loans should be in something tangible, like meat.
Yeah, because in a way, to explore the fiat currency sorcery, then the people who are most able to abstract big business ideas and weird, like say you're working on Wall Street, if you can come up with the strangest derivative that derives off something that isn't really real, we've given the world to the
incomprehensible.
Yeah, so to the greedy autistic mathematicians, they're running everything. I think so.
Yeah. The very idea when I first read about it that money is not based on anything other than confidence in basically the American government.
That's it. It's confidence. Yeah.
And once you lose the confidence, the money goes. Whereas at least before it was based on gold, and gold. Yeah, okay, it's pretty and whatever, but it's useful. Yeah. You can make things out of gold.
Yeah.
Things that work and that don't break easily.
And the great one I saw, and I verified it, I went and looked up how much is an ounce of gold worth. It's like £2,000, something like that. So 100 years ago, an ounce of gold would get you a fine tailored suit from Savile Row. Now an ounce of gold will still buy you a fine tailored suit from Savile Row. So there you go. It's maintained its value. And that it blew me away how 100 years ago an ounce of gold would get me a fine suit, and still an ounce of gold will get me a fine suit. So gold has maintained its value.
Right, so therefore, why don't we just demand to be paid in gold?
It's not a bad idea.
We need to do this, Charles. Gold maintains its value.
It's a very it's a very good currency, very terrible decoration.
But that's exactly what they were doing towards the end of Rome. They were removing the gold from the coins.
Yeah.
It was this inflation that we have at the moment, where there is you just create money, you create currency out of nothing. It's inflation is theft, basically.
Yeah.
And so you eventually you're not really paying anything.
Is inflation? I was explained inflation by my colleagues in the IFA world as saying, oh, in the fiat currency confidence, everyone's obviously it's always going to charge a little bit more because we're always pushing boundaries to see. But then I thought that doesn't make sense, because surely the free market's controlled by something's only worth what someone else is willing to pay for it. And then I thought maybe it's just because it is sorcery. This is like the kind of the angel share, you know, like in the whiskey cask. The inflation is just the alcohol you lose to the gods, you know.
Yeah, I don't think it is sorcery. I think there's something clear going on, and it always happens, by the way, at this stage in civilization, which is the undermining of the currency.
Yeah,
And then you can't pay people.
No,
and
no.
Then you're in trouble.
Yeah. So I hope, like me, as you can see by my very public YouTube channel, I've been training over the last 10 years to become a Mad Maxian warlord in the apocalypse. You know, and fighting crackheads and defending myself and stuff. So I hope all the viewers and yourself, Ed, are preparing to be a high-ranking warlord in the apocalypse, because it can all turn very suddenly. Like, look at southern Israel. One day they're there in the kibbutz doing whatever they're doing, and next thing there's...
Yeah, why is that turned so suddenly? I suppose, is it just that they became complacent? That there hadn't been anything for a while, and the spy systems
yes.
sort of broke down?
And the paper, like there's no communications on electronics. The Israelis listen to everything. Hamas managed to plan it all without the Israelis knowing. So it was the Jews love their holidays. I don't know what holiday it was last Wednesday, but there was only maybe 2 guards per guard tower. Not all of them were manned. They're all on holiday. There's no news. And I saw the videos. What Hamas did, they did the Ukrainian style. They dropped bomb drones, killed the border guards. Then they all ran up to the fence. And whilst they're doing this, 5,000 rockets into Israel. So then obviously, I don't know, because I'm wondering, why didn't the Apache helicopters come in? But I think they're not allowed when the rockets are flying over like at low altitude. There's so many rockets. Maybe the Israelis are not allowed. Anyway, I think... The reason why I'm exploring it, so many people think, oh, the Mossad did it on purpose. They allowed this to happen the same way the Americans allowed 9/11 to happen so then they can like reshape the Middle East. But I don't think so. I think it's truly no indication Hamas was about to do anything. Why do we need to man all the guard towers? There's no indication. We'd never expected. They thought there would be people running up towards the fence and then they could radio in. They did not expect 5,000 rockets, did not expect bomb drones killing the young soldiers.
They said they expect somebody in some sort of weird skycraft to a hang glider to fly over a concert and start machine gunning people.
Paragliding.
That's just.
I saw the videos. I've got Israeli friends, and one of them is really into psytrance, which is the type of music, psychedelic trance music, very big in Israel. And I saw the video at 6:30 a.m. They're all like off their heads. Like, oh. And one guy's filming the paraglider. And they must have thought, tourists, look at that. Like extreme sportsmen enjoying a bit of paragliding.
The dots get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Those are strange fireworks. Why am I bleeding? Why is my intestine hanging out? God, sorry.
No, it's a poor. Yeah. I mean, it's just so
it's just awful.
They're uploading to a grandmother's Facebook page.
Yeah, killing the granny.
I mean, appalling stuff. But the terrible thing about it, as I was saying to Simon Webb earlier, I mean, he was saying to me, I mean, it's a war, and if there is a level on which the person that is highly negatively ethnocentric, that loathes the outsider, is more likely to win. And what that doing that, dreadful as it is an expression of how much they hate beyond anything we could ever feel.
Yeah,
I think ever. You couldn't do something like that, even in war.
What's the word? It's an intractable problem. There's not going to be. There's too much hate, and it's.
I mean, I heard stories from old soldiers that I spoke to in World War II, and they, for example, they'd capture a German or whatever, and they'd, well, how can I put it nicely, sort of take out their frustrations on them.
Beat them up a bit.
Basically, yeah. And it's a war crime.
Of course it is.
That is a war crime. But yeah. A minor one.
Yeah.
But you know, they would do things like that. Yeah. These poor young English guys that have been taken away from home in 1941 or whatever, and they've been away for years, and it's all the stress. And I'm sure the Germans did the same to captured English people.
Yeah, but that seems almost gentlemanly now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you know what, even, remember Saddam in 1991, he shot down a couple of Tornado pilots, paraded them on TV. Remember, do you remember? You've got the image of the beating bruised up. And that seems like such a almost an old school gentlemanly, like, if I was a fighter pilot and I got shot down over Syria, I would expect to be roughed up a bit by Assad's men, you know. But you don't want your throat slit, so
No.
So yeah, the hatred, as you said, it's...
Well, I met a guy. I was a member of the Guildford Young Archaeologists Club when I was 11, and I met this guy.
Indiana Jones hat.
I'm afraid there was nothing exciting about it. And there was this guy. I was 11, wasn't I? So he was about 11, I guess. And he'd been in Kuwait. They'd lived in Kuwait, and he'd been, I don't know if you remember, there was one. He took these Western hostages, and then they filmed Saddam meeting and chatting these Western hostages, and him and his parents and sister or whatever were them.
Really, the little boy that we saw, was that him?
Yeah, it was him. And he,
about the same age as us then.
Yeah, exactly the same age as us, yeah. And he, as I said, 91, 11 years old. And he met Saddam, shook his hand, was spoken to by a translator, and he said Saddam was a very nice, friendly guy.
Yeah, I've seen the footage. Yeah, the boy was just confused. You can tell he hadn't been mistreated. But looking back, I bet we wish we still had Saddam in power. He liked to keep the crazies in control a bit.
Yeah, I mean, a friend of mine when I was at university set up a society called Durham Junior Bathists.
Really, the Bathists?
Because it's a joke, really. But the student union had no problem with that.
Yeah,
it was just a joke society. But yeah, now I mean, if he was there, I mean, he was a vicious and evil dictator. But he did kind of hold together. The Middle East has kind of got a bit complicated since Saddam.
Americans and Tony Blair, we really believed that once we liberated them, they would embrace democracy and liberal values with open arms.
I don't understand why we believed that.
Wishful thinking, isn't it? Because there's so much money to be made from...
wishful thinking. I mean, everything I know about genetics and the level of cousin marriage in these countries and all of this kind of stuff tells me that no, they are not going to.
Yeah.
Democracy involves cooperating with people that aren't related to you.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, Ed, is it true... that coming back to the consanguineous marriages, blah, blah, blah. But in civilized areas that have been very civilized for thousands of years, do executioners play a eugenic effect to make people chilled out? And
that was my first ever YouTube video.
You're the one that planted the seed.
Maybe. It was so bad. I filmed it on like my iPad or something because I couldn't work out how to do it on the computer.
Yeah.
I've redone it since. But yeah, there was a guy called Peter Frost. I can't remember whether I interviewed him on my channel. I think I have. He came up with this idea. So first of all, he said this is the pacification effect.
Pacification.
If you execute people for lots of crimes, who are you actually executing? The answer is young, childless men. That's who commits crimes.
Most of them, yeah.
Right. Yeah. He argued that one of the things that paved the way for Christianity, of this religion of peace, was this process which the Romans had engaged in. They pacified the population. I call it the taming of the gene.
Taming of the gene.
And they pacified the population. Now, of course, then it breaks down. The whole civilization breaks down, and you get the more pro-social people, whatever, stop breeding, and you get degeneration to barbarism and whatever.
Yeah.
And then it happens all over again. That in the Christians were at first against capital punishment, and they probably did a lot of damage in that sense because they were against capital punishment. They got rid of it. Mm-hmm. And then in about 1000 or something, they started to change, and there was this belief that the evil should be removed so the good can live in peace.
Yeah.
And you start to get this system of execution for all felonies. And he calculated, this guy, that about 2% of the male population every generation were being executed.
It's a hell of a trim.
Mm. 2%. And who were these 2%? These would have been people who commits crime, psychopaths, basically.
Yeah.
Young men, stupid people.
Yeah.
So it would have been having a selection effect.
Yeah.
And even people low in religiosity. I published a paper where me and a colleague calculated that there was a causal relationship between us becoming more religious across time, more and more heresy, more witchcraft, and us just this execution process. So it's probably we stopped executing people for loads of crimes round about the time of the Industrial Revolution. And so it's probably an extra compounding effect that all these young men, the worst young men, the worst, the cracky scum, as you call them, worst people, were being removed every generation.
Well, now they're encouraged to have 15 children by 10 different dads and live in free houses. So society is FUBAR Bundy. You know the term FUBAR Bundy?
I'm afraid I don't know.
FUBAR stands for fucked up beyond all recognition. It's a paramedic term. And Bundy is for, but unfortunately, not dead yet. So when the paramedic...
They write that on the bed, do they? Or on the,
I think they say it to each other when they turn up at a motorbike accident when the man's in half, but he's still screaming. He's FUBAR Bundy. Speaking of FUBAR Bundy and what we were saying earlier, Ted Bundy, the serial killer in America, didn't have any children, I don't think, normally. But women got... He smuggled his sperm out of the maximum security prison before he was executed, and he's got two children by a woman who inseminated herself with his psychopathic...
Yeah.
So women, obviously, I'm not going to say... But there is a type of woman who likes... But this must be an evolutionary thing.
Oh, it is, I think so.
In the past, the big warrior, like the big bad...
That's who won through, the psychopath. There was a study on the Yanomamo, and it found that the men that had the most children... This is both very primitive.
Amazon tribe.
Very primitive. They're called the fierce people, the most... violent Amazon tribe.
Yeah.
And it was found that they were... and by the way, 12% of English people are left-handed. It's about 25% of them.
25% of left-handed?
Left-handedness correlates with psychopathology, with testosterone. So that's why women are more right-handed than men.
Yeah.
And they found that, it was the men that basically killed the most other men that had the most women.
What is it about killing other men that women find just so sexy?
Well, it's because in a society like that, in an unstable society, it's that kind of man that reaches the top.
Yes.
So it's an expression of other things. If you kill other men, you're also high in testosterone, you're good at fighting, you're muscular. Yeah. So it's an indirect thing, perhaps. But it's also an expression, he's killing other men, no one's going to mess with him.
Yeah.
And so in an unstable ecology, you need a child, you need your kids to be good at that.
Yeah.
They inherit it. So it becomes a selection thing among women that are, what I know as fast history strategists, the ones that revolve to unstable, easy ecology. There's going to be something attractive about the psycho.
Yeah,
and that's why you get these women that were like writing Jeffrey Dahmer letters in prison.
And even though he was a homosexual,
even though they didn't care.
Yeah, but so they must be attracted by, if a man is like, if he's got nothing holds him back, he's more likely to get resources, isn't he?
She's evolved, and so therefore people like that, these crazy blokes basically can be attractive. Some women you get, and they attract like the wild boy.
Mm-hmm.
But at its most extreme, it is unfortunately murderous.
Do you think maybe we've trimmed 2% a year too many, that now there's not enough wild, intrepid, big?
It's a very good point.
Women are screaming out for those missing genes.
That's a good point, and it's been argued actually.
We've gone too far.
This happened. Why is it that the Vikings come from Scandinavia, and now the Scandinavians are the most pacifist sort of people?
They even sit down to wee.
All right, do they?
They do. It's very common in Scandinavia for men to sit down to urinate.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
In Finland, I should say. I mean, Finland is not really Scandinavia, but in Finland, I'm fairly sure they stand up to wee.
Yeah, I think Sweden, Norway, Denmark—they're very sit down. Like, they don't want to offend anyone.
It's a
hyper-masculine, toxic masculine trait to point your penis down at the thing and stand up, and horrible.
Oh, that's appalling.
It's a facsimile for rape. It's, you're raping the toilet.
I mean, Victorians, if you go to some very old loos, they have bees and things like that printed on the urinal for you to aim at.
Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam. I first saw that in the 90s. So you piss on the bee. You've got to
aim somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, it's quieter if you aim towards the porcelain. Yeah.
Oh, it's true. I wanted to ask, it suddenly came to my mind. Are the aggressive, spiteful, mutant neo-Bolsheviks going to die out within a generation?
Yeah, I'm thinking that when we go for our little vlogging walk, if nothing happens, we can just have a discussion about spiteful mutants. I don't know about a generation, but because they'll keep being born, won't they?
Yeah.
But certainly there is evidence that being left wing, the major steriliser among full stop is being left wing, and being left wing is basically a mark of, as far as I'm concerned, the evidence. Yeah. It's, I don't want to exaggerate it, but of mutation. And among the more intelligent, particularly, being left wing is a it's correlated with sterility. So I do think, yeah, I don't know about a generation, but I do think that, that you're going to get a move back to conservatism and among the more intelligent, which means a good future, which might mean possibly, but then on the other hand, low IQ is still predicting breeding.
Yeah.
And low IQ correlates with mutation as well.
Yeah.
So with low IQ and poor health and whatever, they all go, like I said, in Clacton. Yeah. So there won't be a shortage of crackies for the Charles Veatches of the next generation. And on that note, I would like to thank Charlie for coming on. Absolute pleasure to meet him at last. And we're going to go out for a bit now. Then we're going to have dinner. Should be very, very nice. Yeah. Hopefully no crackies there. I will see you all soon. Remember to subscribe to Charlie's channel. And I will see you all soon. And goodbye. Are you ready for the future of the West?